Welcome to The Deep Dive, a deeper look at sermons from Faithway Fellowship Baptist Church.
It is always so good to be here for this.
So, I want you to imagine something. You wake up on a Tuesday.
Tuesday is notoriously the hardest day of the week, I think.
Oh, absolutely. So it's Tuesday, you pour your coffee, you look out the window, and you make this firm promise to yourself. You are going to be incredibly patient today.
Right, like today is the day I am perfectly centered.
Yes, centered, kind, totally in control of your emotions. And then by 8:15 a.m., you are absolutely losing your mind over a misplaced shoe.
Just completely melting down.
Exactly. You're barking at your family. Your stress is just through the roof. And that beautiful morning promise is completely shattered.
It is gone, just out the window.
Right. And you're left wondering, why do we constantly do the things we promise ourselves we won't?
That is the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It really is. So today, our mission is to explore that that really messy, beautiful, and sometimes incredibly frustrating reality of spiritual growth.
Yeah, and we've got some great material for this.
We do. We're looking at two recent teachings from Pastor Tim Travis. One is called Fixed on His Work, and the other is The Gospel of Christ.
And that tension you just described, you know, the whole misplaced shoe meltdown, that is the exact heartbeat of what we are unpacking today.
Because there's this massive gap, right?
Huge gap. We are looking at the space between a divine guarantee, this promise that God will absolutely finish the spiritual work. He starts in you, and our daily stumbling, highly imperfect human nature.
It's that friction between who you know you're supposed to be,
right,
and, well, who you actually were at breakfast this morning.
Exactly. And to make sense of that gap, Pastor Travis introduces a concept that really sits at the center of being a work in progress.
Right. He uses a theological term that, I mean, it can sound a bit intimidating at first. Sanctification.
Yeah, sanctification. It's one of those heavy church words.
It really is.
And it can easily lose its functional meaning if we just sort of treat it as, you know, religious jargon. But Pastor Travis defines it with incredible simplicity.
He does. He says it just means being set apart for a specific use.
Right. It is not about suddenly becoming this glowing, levitating saint who, like, never makes a mistake.
Which is a relief.
Truly. It's entirely about purpose and design.
And he uses this everyday analogy to explain it, the water bottle.
Oh, I love the water bottle analogy. It's so grounding.
It really is, because a water bottle is perfectly designed to hold water. It has the right cylindrical shape. It's got the twist-off cap, the durable material.
Yeah, you wouldn't look at a water bottle and think, I'm going to use this to iron my dress shirts.
Or, you know, use it to hammer a nail into a piece of wood.
That would just ruin the bottle in the wall.
Exactly. It has a tailored purpose.
Yeah.
And the teaching here is that God sets you apart for a specific, uniquely tailored use.
Which is deeply comforting. I mean, it means your specific personality, your background, your exact wiring, none of that is accidental.
But getting there is a process.
It is. To understand how God takes us from our raw, messy state into that usable, tailored shape, Pastor Travis breaks sanctification down into three distinct stages.
The three P's.
Yes, the three P's. So the first stage is positional.
And this one is instantaneous.
Right. When a person believes, they are saved and set apart right then and there by God's word. Pastor Travis actually references John 17.17 to anchor this.
Pointing out that we don't, like, earn this positional status.
Exactly. It is granted entirely by grace, putting us in a completely new standing before God.
So stage one is the change in your identity. You're in.
You're in.
But then we slam into the second pin.
Yeah, we really do slam into it. Progressive sanctification.
And this is where the daily friction really lives. This is the grind of, you know, growing in grace.
Pastor Travis points to 2 Timothy 2.21 for this one. It talks about purging oneself to be a vessel of honor, meet for the master's use.
And he explains that the word meet there means reaching the standard.
Right, almost like making par on a golf course.
And making par is something none of us do perfectly on our own.
Definitely not, which is why this stage is called progressive. It is the daily, active, and frequently very painful process of being shaped.
And we humans, we just inherently resist this stage.
Oh, absolutely. Because we love instant gratification. I mean, we want to download spiritual maturity the exact same way we download a software update on our phones.
Just click a button and boom, I'm patient.
Right. But progressive sanctification requires time, discipline, and frankly, a lot of failure.
Which leads us to the third P.
Yes, perfect sanctification or glorification. He references 1 Thessalonians 5.23 for this.
This is the ultimate future guarantee.
It is the day you finally see Jesus and are entirely free from all pain, all problems, and all sin.
The thing that keeps this entire three-stage process from just feeling like a massive anxiety-inducing stress test is this bedrock promise. It's found in Philippians 1.6.
Oh, that's such a crucial verse.
It is. Paul writes, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ.
It is the guarantee that God always finishes what he starts.
And that divine guarantee is, well, it's completely counterintuitive to how we operate.
It really is. Human beings are notoriously bad at finishing things.
Oh, yeah. We abandon diets. We leave half-read books on our nightstands.
We quit hobbies the second they get difficult.
Yep. And Pastor Travis illustrates this human unreliability with the story of the Crazy Horse Monument.
In the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Right. And the scale of that project is just unbelievable. It's an entire mountain being carved into a statue.
And it is the longest running active construction project in the world. They started blasting that granite back in 1948.
1948.
Decades have passed, generations of workers have come and gone, and they're still working on it today.
He mentioned that for the longest time, the sign at the bottom of the mountain basically just read, under construction.
Yeah. That is the pinnacle of human effort, right? Perpetually delayed, constantly running out of funding subject to the elements.
But God does not operate on a perpetually delayed timeline.
No, he doesn't. When he drafts the blueprint for your life, the completion of the project is a guaranteed, unshakable fact.
You know, thinking about that under construction sign, living in this progressive stage feels exactly like living inside a house that is perpetually undergoing a major renovation.
Oh, that is a great way to put it.
Right. God has the master blueprint, and you logically know the finished house is going to be spectacular. Positional sanctification means your name is already on the deed.
You own the house.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But progressive sanctification, you are living in the drywall dust.
There is plastic sheeting taped over all your doorways.
Yes. The plumbing gets shut off right when you need a shower. There is loud, disruptive hammering at 6 a.m.
It is chaotic, it is messy, and it feels completely disruptive to your comfort.
We pray for God to use us, but we get very upset when he starts tearing down the load-bearing walls of our pride to make room for that growth.
We want the finished mansion, but we deeply resent the demolition phase.
Which brings up a really tough question. Because living in that drywall dust is exhausting.
It really is.
If God guarantees he is the master architect and he guarantees he will finish the house, why does living in this progressive phase feel like one personal failure after another?
Why do we still yell over the misplaced shoe?
Exactly.
That frustration is universal. And Pastor Travis addresses it by taking us into the book of Romans, specifically chapter 7. He calls this the struggle of the two natures.
Looking at the Apostle Paul.
Right. Who is arguably the greatest Christian to ever live, writing to the Roman church. And Paul captures this cognitive dissonance perfectly.
He just strips away all the shiny religious veneer.
He really does.
Using the King James wording Pastor Travis references, Paul writes, "For what I would, that do I not. But what I hate, that do I."
It is incredibly validating to hear the guy who wrote half the New Testament admit that his internal life is often a mess of contradictions.
It makes you feel a little less crazy.
Totally. And Pastor Travis explains the mechanics of this struggle by looking at the role of the biblical law.
For the Jewish believers Paul was writing to, the law of Moses was the ultimate standard of righteousness.
But Pastor Travis uses this brilliant comparison. He compares the law to a mirror.
Let's unpack the mechanics of that, because I think it's a vital distinction.
Yeah, let's do it.
A mirror is designed to do exactly one thing, right? Hang on the wall and reflect the reality of what is in front of it.
Right. So if you have a massive smudge of dirt on your forehead, the mirror reveals it.
But you do not pull the mirror off the wall and try to comb your hair with it.
No. Or try to scrub your face with the glass. That wouldn't do anything.
The mirror has zero power to actually clean the dirt it reveals.
The law operates the exact same way. It defines sin. It says, thou shalt not covet. And suddenly the mirror reflects just how intensely you have been coveting your neighbor's life.
Or your coworker's promotion.
Exactly. But the law cannot reach inside your chest and surgically remove the urge to covet. It only diagnoses the disease.
And the root of that disease, the source of the dirt in the mirror, is what Paul calls the flesh.
Yes. And Pastor Travis makes a crucial linguistic distinction here. The Greek word Paul uses for the flesh is sarx.
So he is not talking about our literal skin, bones, and blood.
No, he isn't saying that having a physical human body is inherently evil. The context of sarx is the old earthly nature.
Like an operating system.
Yes, think of it as a pre-programmed operating system that naturally opposes God. Before positional sanctification, that operating system controlled everything you did.
It's the part of you that instinctively prioritizes self-preservation.
It feeds your own ego, holds grudges, and seeks comfort above all else.
And even after you are saved, after you're given a new nature,
that old sarx operating system is still installed on the hard drive, running in the background, constantly trying to reassert control over your behavior.
Okay, I want to push back on this mirror concept a bit on behalf of the listener.
Sure, go for it.
If this old operating system is constantly running and the law is just a mirror that makes us feel terrible about our messy reflections without offering any power to fix us, why did God even give it to us?
That's a very fair question.
Right. Isn't it just inherently depressing to have a mirror constantly pointing out your flaws if it leaves your hands tied?
Well, it feels depressing if you think the goal of the Christian life is to fix yourself.
Oh, okay.
The mirror is absolutely necessary because it acts as a wrecking ball to our self-righteousness. Human beings are, frankly, masters of self-deception.
We really are. We grade ourselves on a curve.
Exactly. Without the stark reflection of the law, we trick ourselves into thinking we are doing just fine. We think, I'm a generally good person, I haven't murdered anyone, I don't really need rescuing.
The law shatters that illusion.
It is designed to bring you to the end of your own resources, to completely bankrupt your pride so that you realize you desperately need grace.
It proves you need a savior, not just a self-help behavioral checklist.
Yes. The frustration is actually the mechanism that drives us to surrender.
Because as long as I think I can clean my own face, I won't ask for the water of grace.
The mirror forces me to ask for help. It destroys the ego, which is the primary barrier between us and God's power.
That reframes the entire struggle. So if the mirror just diagnoses the mess and the flesh is this stubborn operating system running in the background, what tools are we actually supposed to use?
How do we cooperate with this massive renovation project without just spinning our wheels?
Right. What's the practical step here?
Well, the very first tool is recognizing that a massive shift in jurisdiction has taken place.
Okay.
Pastor Travis points out a reality that should take a huge weight off your shoulders. A believer is no longer a slave to sin.
That is a huge statement.
It is. Before that positional change in your identity, you were legally bound to that old nature. But now, neither Satan nor sin can force a believer to disobey God.
They can tempt you, obviously.
Oh, absolutely. They know exactly where your specific buttons are installed because they helped program that old operating system.
But they cannot compel you to act. You are no longer a hostage. You have agency.
You have the freedom to choose. But, and here's the catch, because we still have muscle memory from that old nature, we often reach for the absolute worst tools to try and build our lives.
And Pastor Travis uses these highly relatable, slightly absurd anecdotes to illustrate this.
He talks about the sheer frustration of trying to hammer a nail into a board using a shoe.
Just pounding away with a sneaker.
Right, or reaching into the kitchen drawer, grabbing a butter knife, and trying to use it as a flathead screwdriver.
Oh man, I have actually done that.
We all have, and what happens? You end up completely twisting the metal, ruining the butter knife, and the screw hasn't moved a millimeter.
Not even a little bit.
When we try to fix our spiritual problems using the flesh, when we use our own willpower, our pride, or our own intellect to manufacture growth, it is the spiritual equivalent of using a butter knife on a screw.
You exhaust yourself, you damage the tool, and the structural problem remains completely unfixed.
Exactly. And if you spend your whole life building with those wrong tools, relying entirely on the flesh, the results might actually look impressive to the outside world for a little while.
But they have zero structural integrity.
Pastor Travis brings up this wild architectural image to drive this home. He talks about the world's largest sandcastle.
Well, yeah, built in Blokhus, Denmark.
Right. It is 69 feet tall, intricately carved, and it looks absolutely majestic.
But underneath all the intricate carving, what is the fundamental reality of a sandcastle?
It is entirely unlivable.
Right. Think about the sandcastles you might be pouring all your energy into right now. Maybe it is your career trajectory, your public image, or your financial status.
You can spend decades building it up 69 feet high, but you cannot install solid oak doors in it.
You cannot put glass windows in it. You certainly cannot wire it for electricity or put a mini-split AC unit in a sandcastle.
And eventually, no matter how much glue or structural integrity they try to pack into the center of that sand in Denmark, the elements will reclaim it.
When the storms come, a sandcastle falls.
Pastor Travis connects this directly to Jesus' teaching at the end of the Sermon on the Mount. The man who builds his house on the sand is the one who hears the truth, but tries to live out of his own fleshly resources.
While the man who builds on the rock is the one who hears the word and actually does it.
Doing the word is the correct tool, and Pastor Travis distills that correct tool down to a very accessible concept, taking the next step of faith.
And that is such a relieving metric. Yeah. It is not about mapping out a 10-year spiritual master plan.
Or achieving absolute moral perfection by next Tuesday.
Right. It is simply asking, what is the next right thing to do in this exact moment?
Maybe it is choosing to open your Bible today instead of your phone.
Maybe it is spending 5 minutes in prayer.
Or maybe it's just choosing to serve your spouse or your neighbor out of love rather than a sense of, you know, begrudging obligation.
Is localized obedience.
Yeah. But this introduces a fascinating functional tension.
Oh, so?
Well, on one hand, Pastor Travis heavily emphasizes that God is the initiator and the sustainer. God performs the work, and God guarantees the finish line.
But on the other hand, he says we have to put in daily effort by taking those next steps of faith.
Right. So how do we balance resting in God's immense sovereign power with the reality that we still have to put our own boots on the ground?
Fight the old operating system and do the hard work of daily obedience.
Exactly. And to resolve that tension, Pastor Travis uses this brilliant, totally unexpected analogy from the world of NASCAR.
I have to admit, NASCAR was not on my bingo card for a deep dive into Romans chapter 7.
No, I didn't see it coming either. But the mechanics of it work so perfectly. He describes a specific racing strategy called bump drafting.
Okay, set the scene for us.
Picture the final lap of a major race. A driver is in second place. He's in a position where he could potentially pull out of the slipstream, try to slingshot around his teammate in the lead, and maybe win the glory for himself.
Right. Take the win.
But instead, he stays directly behind the leader. He drives his car right up to the bumper of his teammate's car and physically pushes him from behind.
Supplying his own engine's momentum to guarantee his teammate crosses the finish line first.
Exactly. And Pastor Travis uses this to illustrate how God's power interacts with our effort. God is the engine behind us.
He is the one providing the sustained horsepower, the grace, and the forward momentum.
He is the driving force guaranteeing that we will cross the finish line of perfect sanctification.
But let me push on the mechanics of that analogy just a bit.
Sure.
If I am the lead car, and I'm being pushed at 200 miles an hour by God's momentum, what happens if I yank the steering wheel to the left?
Well, that's the thing.
Don't I still have the capacity to steer myself straight into the wall? How much of this is my responsibility?
You absolutely still have your hands on the steering wheel, and that is exactly where your daily obedience comes in.
Okay.
You can't just take your hands off the wheel, take a nap, and expect the momentum to do all the work. If you steer into the wall of your own fleshly desires, you are going to experience the sparks, the damage, and the really painful friction of the wall.
God's momentum will ultimately keep you moving toward the finish line. He won't let you total the car and abandon the race.
Right, but the amount of damage and frustration you experience along the way is heavily dependent on how you steer.
You steer by making those daily choices.
Taking that next step of faith and staying in alignment with his drafting power.
The pressure is completely reframed there. You are required to steer to be awake and active, but you are not the one tasked with generating the horsepower to save yourself.
The engine pushing you is infinite.
Which brings us full circle to that final stage we talked about at the beginning, perfect sanctification.
The finish line.
Pastor Travis shared a story near the end of his teaching that brings all of this high-level theology right down to a deeply emotional, human level.
Oh, this story, it just stops you in your tracks.
It really does. He spoke about a tombstone designed for a young boy.
And this boy had spent his entire earthly life bound to a wheelchair. He never knew what it was like to run, to jump, or to walk unassisted.
His physical reality was completely restricted by the brokenness of his earthly body.
By the limitations of the sarks.
But when the boy passed away, his father made a very specific, beautiful request to the craftsman making the tombstone.
He told them, do not put him in a wheelchair.
Instead, the statue on the monument depicts this young boy standing up.
He is on strong, completely healthy legs, and he is reaching upward toward the sky.
It is a stunning visual manifestation of the promise of glorification.
It represents the ultimate guarantee that the brokenness of the flesh, whether it is a physical illness that confines you to a chair, a deep emotional trauma, or just the exhausting daily psychological struggle against your own selfish operating system, has a strict expiration date.
As Paul wrote in Philippians, God will perform the work until the day of Jesus Christ.
That is the unbreakable promise of completion guaranteed for you.
The construction project will end.
The drywall dust will be swept away.
The house will be finished.
And you will finally step into the reality of being entirely free, perfectly aligned with the purpose you were designed for.
It fundamentally changes how you view a difficult Tuesday morning, doesn't it?
Completely.
Knowing that the frustration of the misplaced shoe, the friction of the renovation, isn't permanent, it gives profound purpose to the struggle.
It reminds us that the struggle is evidence of the construction, not evidence of abandonment.
Now, if you want to experience the full context of these teachings and hear the nuance we just couldn't fit into our time today, those full sermons from Pastor Tim Travis are available right now.
You really should check them out.
You can find them on YouTube, Facebook, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Just head over to their website at faithwayfbc.com for all the links and more information.
They are incredibly rich teachings. Listening to the full messages will give you even more tools to navigate that progressive stage of growth.
To wrap up our deep dive today, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over this week. It connects back to something we discussed right at the top of the show.
About the water bottle.
Exactly. Pastor Travis mentioned that God has set you apart for a specific use, perfectly designed like a water bottle with a tailored purpose.
It is easy to accept that our talents and our strengths are part of that design.
Right, but we rarely view our weaknesses that way.
No, we usually want to hide those.
So I want you to look closely at your own life this week. Think about the things you usually consider to be your flaws, or the things that make you uniquely, sometimes frustratingly, you.
Is there a deeply unique experience you've had?
An unusual quirk in your personality that you constantly apologize for? Or even a past hardship, a specific season of drywall dust and chaos that you have spent years wishing God would have just taken away?
Because here is the provocative thought to consider as you go about your week.
What if that exact quirk or that specific hardship is not a mistake in your manufacturing? What if the thing you have been begging God to remove is actually the exact specific tool he designed to fulfill your unique purpose?
Something for you to think about.
Thanks for diving deep with us. We'll see you next time.